gekoesterd is nie. Wat nou is van Chris en Chapers aan ons committee. Next to me is Mr. Dustin Davids, committee coordinator. Over to you, members.
Good afternoon, my name is Matlodi Mangato.
Goedemiddag, Dylan Mitchell. Good afternoon, Carlo Gezi.
Good afternoon,
over to you, Ramesh, for the HUDP introduction. Good afternoon, Chairperson, and to the members of the committee. My name is Zachary Oswald, head of health department.
Good afternoon, Chair. Also, all the members. Harry Medina, I'm the head of program 2.
Good afternoon, Chair, members. Tulemba Kantana, head provincial government of the program.
Good afternoon, all. Isaac Smith, acting head of governance and asset management.
Good afternoon, everybody. Nadia Ibrahim, acting head asset management.
Good afternoon, Chair. Esther Pretorius from the ministry.
Good afternoon, members. Rizal Jelly, strategic planning management from provincial treasury.
Good afternoon, Chair and members. My name is Iwe Mazomba, the director responsible for supporting and interlinking financial systems.
Good afternoon. My name is Ndota Nanumera, director of fiscal services.
Good afternoon, Malcolm Wilson, acting head of public policy services.
Good afternoon, chair members. Rishan Gassi, financial management.
Good afternoon, chair members. Theophilus Mahlaba, CFO's office.
Good afternoon, Ashna Bring from the CFO's office.
Annemarie Smith, CFO.
Good afternoon, chair members. Blanche Gansler, central manager.
Good afternoon, Ritvind van Rensburg, provincial forensic services.
It's fine. Members, we're going to do provincial treasury first, and we're going to do governance. Governance is page 83 to 100. Like you know, I don't do page by page, so we ask the questions. And to be fair, I'm going to ask members for the first round, if you want to ask questions, to a maximum of 3, and then we'll give it another round. But just give the page number, and then the questions, so that it, and then I'll determine the amount of questions, and then I'll give the HOD opportunity to ask questions. Governance members on provincial treasury, member Ace first. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to start on page 87. At the top of 87, provincial government supply chain management also on a quarterly basis informs the accounting office of employees who has a registered supply profile. And during the reporting period, we see there's 2 potential conflicts were identified. And if we can be informed around that and get some information, and just to understand how there's even a possibility, even if it was not a direct conflict of interest, then, Honorable Chairperson. Chairperson, I will continue and I'll then get to the Audit Committee report, and if I may proceed with that as well as part of my 3 questions. To start off with, I just would like to ask or kick off with some issues around that. We also had an in-depth discussion with, of course, the Auditor General and the Audit Committee around that. And my second and third question is the following. It was pointed out that the MGROW coordination team are not monitoring the Municipal Finance Management Act units, and meetings are not being held, and that does require attention. I would like to ask the department why it's not happening, and how they're going to rectify that part. Then the next question is that that there was no evidence of the review of the electronic register contained on the enterprise content management tool, and there was also a recommendation and appointed DSA official duties were not included in the performance contract. That's with regard to DPSA, Director on Public Administration and Management, delegations. Question is, how are you going to rectify that and why did that happen?
Thank you, Member Bayes. Questions? Member McKenzie, then Member Chacha. Member McKenzie.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Sorry, Member McKenzie, when you have asked a question related to the page, because you know, related to the page, I don't have that document, so it's just related to the page.
Okay, I'll do that. Thank you, Chairperson. Just on the items identified by the Internal Audit Committee, and I'm not going to refer to any specific one, but some of them have been referred to. But I remember 2 years ago when I served on this committee, none of these items were identified as issues. I mean, I think at one point your internal audit sheet was clear. So it is just of a concern for me that there's been a few regression, although not material enough to affect your audit, but there have been a few lapses. I just want to find out why and what has you put in place to avoid this happening again next year, please.
Chatsman?
Yes, Chairperson. Also, I would like to start from page 87. On the policy of the health and safety industries, I see the bottom paragraph speaks about the provisions in terms of health risk where employees are covered. I just want to understand, Chair, health. This means that people who might be in the office are not covered, but because this one covers the office. At the bottom, the department occupies part of the building, which it is not a custodian, but provides and maintains as far as possible working environment that is safe and without risk to the health and safety of the employees. Good, that's fine. I'm just asking, in terms of visitors, are we covered here? In terms of the safety. The second point, Chair, I also want to go to the internal controls, particularly when the issue in relation to the transfer payments in terms of fees. I just want to understand, Chairperson, in terms of grants, and we are mentioning that there are oversight and responsibilities that are left in monitoring key deliverables and measurements. And where I would want to look directly, I would hope if you can also indicate which also municipalities that have been affected by this lapse. Because the assumption is that all municipalities are covered, and indeed we do see some improvement in municipalities, but which one where this oversight is absent? And also if you can take it, also go to the management capacity building grant. The same issue, if we can be specific to say which one are we not doing while in making sure that performance was not being achieved because of some of these loopholes that are there. Thank you.
Thank you, thank you. I'm going to give the opportunity now to respond and then we'll take another round. Thank you.
Okay, good afternoon once again. Chairperson, I'm going to ask my team to assist me with some of the responses. I mean, on the last question I asked, Eric, just to deal with the what we're doing about the issues raised within the audit findings in relation to transfer payments. And in fact, I asked to after full grants to municipalities. And then if I can just ask Rizal to talk about the health and safety question. And then if I can then just ask, ideas is to talk about the process in relation to page 87, and see if she has the details available, just to talk about the reasons why those things were cleared, and then I think also just around the issue of the findings on the Indra coordination. But Chair, let me perhaps just sketch a bit of context. I think the whole idea because one of the members asked the question around why is there a regression. Chair, as part of the process to manage this between all departments, I mean, every accounting officer is required in order to have an internal plan. And in fact, that whole process exists to assist myself as the accounting officer to deal with risk management. And part of that process is for the internal, for the ERM process to identify the key risk in consultation with myself and the management team. And then we decide which audit limits we look at based on the risk profile. Then, after that process, they tell us whether the risks are adequately addressed, and then whether risks are not adequately addressed, they tell us why, and then they give us a set of findings, and then after that process, sometimes housekeeping and administrative findings come up. Now, generally, Jay, I mean, much of the findings that we've had over the last year or two have not been of a significant nature, right, in the context of profiling from a risk perspective. So I would just ask the committee to understand that these things are part and parcel of the normal checks and balances that we have to have in place. And obviously, what we need to do is tighten up the processes. And I mean, as part of the process, we normally commit to saying, any of my team members that have in the areas of responsibility, they've accepted the recommendations, and therefore they must implement it. It's normally from that perspective. So, I mean, the question around why we're not doing Ingro, monitoring of those, but we are. And what, as an example, what came after the meeting recommendations was to strengthen the process and close any gaps from a control perspective. So I just wanted to put that into context, and I mean also the issue around the DPSA process. A set of delegations or instructions were issued about 2 years ago, and I mean as part of the process to make sure we're implementing those first time requirements correctly, we also subjected to an internal audit process to make sure we cover up our. So I just wanted to sketch a little bit of context so that when my team answers the questions, it's with that in mind.
Chair, I'm going to try and respond to the issue of advance payments and advance. And I think just to connect with what Zach has indicated, if you go back to the data documentation, you will see that the grants has substantially has been adjusted upwards substantially from about 2014-2015 to 2018-2019. In fact, the grants almost doubled. We've actually internally requested internal audit to come and do an audit and to tell us where are some of the gaps in terms of our oversight. I mean, that was entirely based on our risk, internal risk profile. Given the fact that, you know, we didn't want to transfer this money to municipalities, we wanted to make sure that we have an impact and that all the controls that we put in place internally, that all those controls are actually adequate. So the first audit that was conducted, the internal audit team found a couple of gaps, and most of them related to the fact that there wasn't proper SOPs in place, there wasn't proper systems in place to deal with rollovers, the monitoring processes were not adequate. Those were on the municipalities which they sampled, so they sampled a range of municipalities. We then took all those recommendations, and in fact, we then implemented it across the various units. Now, Chair, you must also understand that there are various units within the Treasury that deals with municipalities and where these grants resort. And we've used the last year to implement most of those recommendations. So if you look at the progress that we've made probably until the end of March, I mean, it's not something that we are very excited about, but if you should ask us what is the progress that we've made since the end of the year, and now you will see that a substantial progress has been made in terms of implementing all those recommendations. So at least there's a proper way of assessing the stuff. In fact, we've institutionalized the issues of business plan early on within the standing committee process. Even part of the process was if you don't have a business plan, if the business plan is not signed off, if the deliverables are not clear, we will not make a transfer payment to yourself. If you get to the year end and the money is not committed, you cannot demonstrate it by submitting, you know, certain information to us, we will not entertain your role. And then obviously internally, through our different management structures, you know, our MFMA coordinators meeting, our management structures, we actually monitor what is happening in municipalities and what is happening particularly in relation to this grant. Chair, just another matter, you will all see, if you look at the conditions of the grant, it's very, very onerous. It's one of those things where we are serious, and there are municipalities that struggle with complying to some of those conditions. The other issue is also you don't want to place a kind of over-compliance burden on municipalities. Like, you're giving them 500,000, but it costs them 2 million rand to comply to those conditions that you've set. Then that by itself also doesn't make sense. So part of the process with internal audit was actually to tell us, you know, come in, look at it independently, and tell the management how can we improve our process. And I mean, in our own discussion with internal audit, we valued the kind of contributions that they've made, and I must personally say that it helped us internally to strengthen a lot of the processes around the ground.
On that.
Okay.
Member Beaverville, and then Member Chacha, on that question. I know, but I want to exhaust that question, that one, allow them to ask on that question. Member Beaverville?
Chicken will be protected here from these two. Mr. Manilo, may I ask you now, after listening to your input, are you now saying that what's in this report from the internal audit, audit committee, that's internal audit, the audit committee is what you asked them to look at and they discovered these gaps because this is the end of the financial year. So during the year past, you sat to them and you told them, look at what we do and where we are doing things incorrectly as far as the Cape, Western Cape Financial Management Support Grant is concerned and the Western Cape Financial Management Capacity Grant is concerned. So you sat together and they discovered these points that they've highlighted there and now you have worked on it. It's not something that is still lacking and you need to work on it. It was lacking and that's why they highlighted it, because you asked them to do it. Because to us, it looks as if this is something that they discovered and they're telling you that this is what's wrong in your department and these are the things that you will have to correct, especially on these two grants and other things that they've mentioned here. Because they talk, and this morning I spoke at length about action plans, having policies about a whole host of things, but you have no action plans. They also speak about that. So I would really like to understand, what is this really? Is this them advising you on what you should change out of their own, or you saying to them, come and sit with us and tell us where we can improve, and you have done that since? Although you can't talk about what you've done since because it ends 31st of March.
Member Chacha?
Same thing again. In terms of the question, does it mean that the department made application of this grant, let's say, a year ago, without undertaking these processes in terms of making sure that there's a proper monitoring process? One, in terms of making sure that municipalities that would be able, that require this grant, will be able to get them without the overburden that you are talking to. So I just want to understand, because it means that, as we are correctly saying, that maybe some of the municipalities must not get this grant because of the burden that we don't want to create in the process. But then, what was happening before you applied? Why did you apply if the systems are not in place?
Right?
I think you must be a bit more specific. This management support
spoke in Dora that you reflected on the last 3 years or that even before that. So it's nothing new. Every year when we ask the questions on the chairperson, we hear that there's business plans in place, they won't get money if it's not an issue. You said you ask internal audit to look at the process, but some are so glaringly obvious that you don't actually need internal audit to look at it. But at the end of the financial year, the 31st of March of this year, 2018, there was a finding then by the audit committee, and that's the crux of the matter, saying business plans, cost estimates were unsupported by evidence. That's critical. And if you don't support that, that's a major problem. Like quotes, deliverables, activities were ill-defined to monitor performance. At the infrastructure level, supporting documents were not attached to payment caps. I mean, that's not something internal audit must tell you. This is almost unforgivable that you must get a report like this to say this is happening in the transfer payments. And this is the one in terms of the management support grant. If we look at the other one, there's also problems like oversight responsibility, accountability, that's not being achieved. Chairperson, we will have to now understand how are you going to fix it? Because it seems like there's no proper business plans, no cost estimates, no proper quotations, nothing, no supporting documents attached when you do payments. Major concern that we identified here. And this morning you said something different. But let's stick to SCOPA and let's respond to that now. This is the follow-up on this section, Chair.
Thank you. Engineer? Chair, let me maybe just explain the process. I mean, the members think that, I mean, this grant has been coming on for some time. In fact, I think the findings that reflected there is part of the follow-up work that's been done. So this is not just the process that's been done on for this year. The very reason why we put this project onto our internal audit plan is, remember, every year we engage the management team with internal audit, and then we would identify certain let's call it things in the department that we want internal audit from a risk perspective to look at. So we were very much interested from ourselves, you know, in looking internally, so get somebody externally to actually assess all our processes, whether it conforms to all the stuff, whether we're getting value for money to this, but more importantly, how can we improve our processes if they are lacking? And as part of the defined process, I mean, you can find this and allocate it to internal audit work in relation to this. We said, please come in and audit the grant system for us and tell us what is wrong in that system. I mean, a lot of the internal audit reports, they report by exception. It doesn't also mean that in relation to every grant, that was actually the issue. So they would pull a sample and they would say, these are the 10 things that we found. They wouldn't tell you these are the 100 things that you're actually doing smartly. Because we were interested to say, what are those things that we can actually improve? And as I've indicated, we've internally taken this thing and we actually discussed it at our top management meeting. We monitor the implementation of the grant after the internal audit report has actually come up. And in fact, some of that stuff has actually been also given over now to internal control, which sits internally in the department, that actually monitors the implementation of the recommendations that came from the internal audit team. And Chair, I mean, given the fact that I've been responsible for most of it, I can attest to the fact that it assisted myself and the broader MFMA team to strengthen the governance arrangements around these grants. So if you come into the department now, you will see that every grant that we give to municipalities are supported by a proper business plan. They don't all look the same, the business plans, but most of the business plans would look the same. And we've taken certain principal decisions. And that's why there are municipalities that have indicated to you this morning that we didn't make transfers to because they didn't have the business plans and stuff in place. All is not perfect yet, but I can tell you from where we started to where we now, given the intervention of internal audit and the audit report, we're in a much better position, particularly from a governance perspective. So we're always on this path of continuous improvement, particularly in relation to these things. Because you also work with an external party. I mean, the point I made around, you know, not creating unnecessary red tape was particularly in relation to your smaller
municipalities for the smaller grants, and I'm not saying that we're not having oversight over them. It is just also to be mindful that put your requirements out there that we know is achievable, that we can measure it, but ultimately it's about the impact that we want to make with some of these grants that, that we're giving to the municipalities. So we are definitely in a much better spot.
On that, Mr. Pinsia, specifically on that, yes.
So can I assume that this will be unlikely to be repeat findings next year?
So, Chair, our work is to ensure that we try. We're all human. I mean, I can never guarantee that it's not going to come, but I mean, we always give it our best shot, and I mean, we try our best. So maybe internal audit will come next year and find some other things for us to improve on. So it's a continuous improvement. Yeah, we'll try.
same question. Definitely the last time to be able to put the microphone on.
Thank you, Chair. Actually, through you, Chairperson, to Mr. Manager, you said that you identified these specific aspects for audit committee to look at. So next year, this current year, have you identified other things for the audit committee to look at and give us a report on? So we won't see these two items again. And we won't know. Or we will just assume that the lessons you've learned here are being implemented. Based on that question that Member McKenzie just asked, we won't see this again. We'll see two other things, or three other things, that you've asked the audit committee to look at. Oh, of course. What can you do with that?
Performance is what's happening on the ground.
not just something out of the books. But as Harry has indicated, we have put a new governance framework in place. Part, remember, internal audit and also the internal controls, part of the process is to help us improving our governance, and we have put that measures in place. And certainly, as the HOD and the accounting office indicate, it will now be part of the order plan for next year, so that we try to minimize these particular matters to reoccur next year. So, and I think this is part of what we call continuous improvement of the order situation. The transfer grants are, and there are also now more grants coming in the year to come. One of the new grants is going to come here, us, and we will brief the committee at the appropriate time. Is a financial recovery grant. It's a grant that the National Treasury wanted to manage to assist municipalities during the financial recovery period. They have now decided that those particular grants will come directly to provinces to assist municipalities. And one of the things that I have discussed with my team is to firstly develop clear policy guidelines and criteria, but also now from this engagement, also proper mechanisms to monitor the actual performance in this particular case in the proper business plan. So I think this was a learning opportunity, and certainly as a learning organization, we will improve as we go forward.
Thank you, Mitchell. The minister covered some of my question in his response now, but is there some way of following the money, for a lack of a better word, especially with regard to service delivery on the ground? So, without mentioning any municipality's name, but the if a project was not completed, will that municipality be held responsible to reverse those payments back to the department, because the intention of that money or the allocation wasn't, I mean, let it be at least, so does it come back, or
that question?
Chairperson, but I think that's the crux of the whole point. If you are in-grow and you have action plans, or you don't have action plans, and you don't have a timeline for implementation, I mean, that's showing you have nice plans, but you don't have implementation. And I would like to ask, what do you do around the implementation of your action plans, and why don't you have timelines?
We actually have got support plans for each and every municipality, with state, with date, and so on. This was only on a particular issue, as I've indicated, because of the change of our approach. We've identified only the end of this financial year. So as I said, we were a bit vague on that because there were some changes that's proposed and we want to take that into account. So it's not that we don't have action plans. In fact, we've got support plans for each and every municipality on all of the different areas, being it accounting, being supplies and management, and those support plans can be provided to the committee, which we execute during that particular year. As I indicated, this was only a couple of gaps, and as a result of the change in the purpose, you know, we wanted to actually buy ourselves a little bit of time that we can actually adequately respond to those issues, even within the changing environment. So the support plans for each and every municipality are there with particular timelines.
Through you to the last question on page 87 that related to conflict of interest and how we ascertain potential conflict of interest. So the reference to provincial government supply chain under my frame would be our transversal functions. And in the earlier session we spoke to the intelligence that we provide to our accounting office in the province. So what we would do is a kind of match or kind of a hit on the CSD where officials, because one of the requirements is that officials who are, we should not do work with governments, officials who are employed. So once we see a hit where an official has a company registered on their name, we identify that with the accounting officer. Secondly, we also do a match on our back payments, so should there be potential for irregular expenditure. And we send that to the accounting officers with the whole range of other information on the supply chain. I think the two for Treasury as a vote were identified, and I think the CFO can speak to the processes that they followed, but they subsequently will do an investigation and see if there was credibility, whether there was an ROR process, whether there was supply chain process that was engaged, whether there were actually dormant companies on the CSD that were still lying there where we got the information. And thereafter they notify the Treasury in terms of registering whether or not it was a verified.
Member S?
Can we get a bit of detail in this? You said two potential conflicts were identified. Is the thing to be clear? Is it two members of staff that engaged with contracts with government? Okay, there's a finger pointed to the question. If you did not continue with that question, I'm sure they will be answered coming in.
Okay.
Thank you very much for the question. Order on our delegation system.
to understand that so was it now captured on the electronic register? Was it signed off and was it verified? And in this financial year we sit now, you can say, although it was a problem in the last year, but you rectified and we can move forward now. Okay?
Yeah, you answered your own question, okay. No further. Is there any questions on governance? Member Chacha, Member Kenyon, Member Ace.
Thanks, Chair. Just to go to page 7. Page 7, image is 7.
You must link your report to the book.
I don't
have that.
Oh, okay. No, it's not a doubt. I was in the problem. I don't have my report. In any case, Chair, we have heard that the audit committee meets with them at least once a quarter. So, Madam Raven, they know it really well. So, Chair, in relation to the issue of the emerging risk, I'm trying to understand, Chair, particularly with the first one of treasury regulations, which that also includes include securities that would have gone through from the treasury, which are supposed to be implemented by all the departments. I just want to understand, Chair, when they either revising or adapting those corporate chair departments, do they cover all the aspects on railway chair or on the basis that we have an issue in one of the departments, particularly agriculture, where this issue of secular regulation has come to the fore in the previous financial year, and I'm sure we have our own discussion when we meet with them. But I just want to understand the link between the departments, treasury, and other departments in relation to the regulation that would have come from the national treasury. The other one, Chair, for me, would be around the microeconomic risk. Just want to understand, Chair, I see the process which was explained in terms of the transfers and all the things, but I just want to understand, are there any buffer being prepared if the, because we are not in a good patch at the moment. The macroeconomic, we are having challenges, and I'm not sure if we will be out by the end of this financial year or not. It depends. So, what are the plans that are being set, particularly to create buffers for small municipalities and hospitals that may not be able to deal some of the issues on
the other. Chair, yes, on number 84, when they talk about the risk management process, I think one of the risks that Member Chacham has identified, and we all know that the petrol went up by 1 rand a couple of weeks ago, and it's likely to go up again. How is the department's interaction with other municipalities, with the other departments going forward, because that's going to obviously have an impact on their budget, post the medium-term budget policy statement that the minister can share his view on that. And then one of the risks, or the emerging risk of the Western Cape Supply Database, and I know that we did receive a presentation some time ago on it, because are we moving over completely to the National Supply Database now? And are we only going to allow to buy from them? Is that the final? Can we just get some clarity on that? Thank you.
Guys, thank you, Chairperson. My question is on page 98.
linking to provincial government accounting and local government accounting. Provincial government accounting relate to procedures, and I want to understand that there's been a gap identified in terms of provincial treasury, help me help desk, and also the capacity building of provincial treasury staff around this. Whether you're aware of this, whether you address this, and to what extent do you address the help desk issues to really just improve what's happening there. And on local government, there was areas identified for improvement is the compliance with the municipal accounting framework. And I would like to understand what progress have you made in terms of improving that. And then my third question, Chairperson, is the one on also emerging risks, but the one that you've identified, and that's the one on the modified cash standard, page 94. And I would like to understand what is the risk flowing from that, and is it a real risk or is it something that's not going to happen, so we can understand and how you mitigate a risk flowing from the modified cash standard. Thank you.
Firstly, thank you for these questions that relate to the global risk and how we respond to some of those risks. HOD and Harry will also deal with some of it, but there are generally two broad strategic approaches. The one deals with our fiscal approach, the Honourable Member Chatham and the Honourable Member McKenzie. The second one deals with what we call our fiscal strategy. So from a fiscal approach perspective, we have two things. One is expenditure management, and I will elaborate on what we're doing there. And the second one is revenue management, but for a specific purpose, and that is for creating what we call creating public value. Now, from an expenditure perspective, because you asked what are we doing in terms of mitigating these particular risks, now in our fiscal landscape, we have the expenditure management, and we look, for example, we have, as you have seen, we've done in the last 2 years, is promote fiscal consolidation in particular, meaning that we must decrease our expenditure and increase our revenue. We also advised the various departments when there was a VAT increase from 14% to 15% in terms of how to deal with that, specifically as it relates to food inflation. As you know, many of the schools and nutrition programs and our child care centers and youth care centers, there's food involved, there's food inflation and impact on that. Also with the devaluation of our currency, costs more to import most of the hospitals, you import medicine from abroad, so there's also medical inflation, so we also advise the Department of Health in terms of how to deal with that. Also one of the biggest fiscal risk strategies is the introduction of expenditure ceilings, specifically as it relates to staffing, the COE. This committee is familiar with that, and Eric can speak about the 2020 principles that we've introduced. Also, you will note that 2 years ago, we've also asked the departments to implement consultancy reduction plans. So that on the expenditure side, many of these strategies to mitigate those particular risks on that particular side. Especially, you recall that last year, or I think 2 years ago, there was a 50 billion rand less tax collection from SARS, and we know that normally translates into a 10%, so it's a 5 billion rand less revenue for this government over 3 years, so we've also managed that in terms of the MTEF period on that particular space. But fiscal consolidation is not only on the expenditure side, it's also on the revenue side. And we have been successful to raise, originally we had about 2.4 billion rand in revenue. Luckily we are now over 3 billion rand in revenue. 1.5 billion is just from motor vehicle licenses. And as Harry has indicated, there was some over collection also from the revenue on the side of the casinos. Normally we have about 40 million rand from horse racing, from the casino industry about 529 million. So that is from the revenue side. But that's on the fiscal approach. But we also have a fiscal strategy, and basically it's about four things. About fiscal sustainability, that has a lot to do with how we manage the provincial revenue fund.
Also, another principle of our fiscal strategy is what we call allocated efficiency. And for us, that is important to see that there are not too many institutions and elements in the system through which we transfer money. We want to transfer money, allocative efficiency has to do point A to point B, and B must do the work not from point B to C and D and E. So allocative efficiency was very important. We are also doing some work in terms of, we have been asked to specifically look at the administrative fee for municipalities in terms of the motor vehicle license, so we look into that as part of allocative efficiency. But there's also fiscal discipline, and also the point that I earlier raised in terms of fiscal consolidation. So from that broad perspective, we try to manage the cash flow of this particular province. We understand what is happening in the macroeconomic environment, and when that happens, we come back to this house, we readjust our budget, we use it part of the adjustment budget process, but certainly we try to be very strict in terms of our fiscal approach that we've adopted and our fiscal strategy, but here I can maybe give more specific strategic interventions. As you know, Honorable Member Chacha, one of the things that we also do, in fact required by law to do, is monitor strictly the IBM report, the Indian Monitoring Report, not only of the provincial governments, but also of all the entities, and in addition, the Section 71 report of the various municipalities. Municipalities certainly are under severe pressure, given what is happening in the economy, and also some of the other major risks, and in this particular financial year under review, one of the biggest risks that impacted on the budget was the budget in relation to the drought and how we had to respond to the drought and how we had to readjust the budget in terms of the drought. We have also, as you know, invoked Section 25 of the Public Finance Management Act to give effect to the major risk that happened last year in Nyasa with the major fires, so we had to deal with that particular issue as well. I think I'm going to hand over to the HOD to maybe elaborate on some of those other particular matters, but from a global governance risk perspective, we try best to deal with this, and Honorable Member Chacha, you will recall that I have also issued a risk, fiscal risk statement, and currently what is happening also in the national fiscus, we are very concerned about those particular matters, but we normally take that also up with the National Treasury to protect the fiscal space that we are currently. We are happy, as you know, with migration of people into the Western Cape. It impacted largely on education, the budget. We've put some items on the agenda of the National Treasury to be rewarded for learning numbers in the schools that are higher than in other provinces. So we have been accommodated through the LULUT system, and based on that, our figures indicate that I think we have received 119 million rand in addition. But that is our engagement with the National Treasury. We were part of the Provincial Equitable Share Task Team, making input into that process. Our team here that worked in the fiscal policy space has made some substantive inputs into the Provincial Equitable Share Review, and we are particularly happy that we are now seeing the fruits of that Provincial Equitable Share review in terms of education. We're not entirely happy. I've written a letter to the former minister in terms of we are not in favor of a phased-in approach because it's a fiscal deficit of the last 4 or 5 years. And I argue that if we phase it in, we are simply increasing our fiscal deficit. But we're engaging in a constructive intergovernmental relationship with the National Treasury in terms of managing this. There's a big in-migration of learners in Northwest, Western Cape and Gauteng, and we have now persuaded the National Treasury to reward those three provinces, and we have also subsequently benefited from that especially.
Member, did you have a question for the Minister? Do you have any
other? Yeah, just to get more information maybe before the HOD, I just wanted to ask him maybe to add to us, if he can, with the issue of the fiscal sustainability within the municipalities, because it's one of the issues that is worrying sometimes that we had a drought. You'll find that now they've seen the rain, it's about a 15%
whether and if we get another drought, immediately we find that they are in trouble. Now, is the department also monitoring that the sustainability of strategic policies that are in place for the municipalities to make sure that they don't fall into red light, which happened before, happens, or there is another case for when it happens? Is the system more reactive rather than being proactive?
I think that's a very important question. I heard very clearly the honourable member ask, what is the strategic framework for financial sustainability of municipalities? What we have developed is a local government sustainability model. And the model says, first look at the governance sustainability inside the municipality, and what we do, for example, to ensure financial governance sustainability, specifically as it relates to the PGO, the budget and treasury offices. The second part is the financial sustainability of the municipality. The next level is the what we call the economic sustainability, because you need to grow businesses in that particular area so that they can pay tax, employ people in that specific area. That's why we do the growth potential study. That is why we deliver the mayor and municipal economic review and outlook, so that we can see what is the economic potential of that municipality, support them with all other departments so that we can get growth in that specific economy. If you just take one municipality, in that area we have the biggest soft fruit industry in the southern hemisphere. So from a support from this government, if you have the biggest soft fruit industry in the southern hemisphere, you must make sure that this government collectively support that Cape Winelands area with proper road infrastructure, because with the soft fruit industry need to be landing at Cape Town at the harbour so that it can be exported. So those are some of the things that we currently work in. So it's governance sustainability, financial sustainability. We look, for example, at the ratios and Belton. Wilson can specifically speak about that. We also, for example, some municipalities, areas over the years ask us to do a financial viability study. So we have supported some municipality into looking into financial sustainability. One of the things that our colleagues are doing here is also to look at domestic resource mobilization. We offer, for example, a revenue masterclass to municipality, so we can see how we can increase their revenue. And through the work of this treasury resource, there were some successes in increasing the revenue base as a result of the interventions of the revenue masterclass. In fact, soon, in November month, we will now have another MECO member of finance and MECO finance workshop, where we ask the municipalities to come and present at the workshop their case studies of how they have increased their own revenue bases. So we are looking at that in terms of economic sustainability. And lastly, honourable member Maseko, government sustainability, economic sustainability, and financial sustainability must create public value. And that's what we want to see. All right. In this house, and all of my member Ace has been on the record asking about the underspending on certain specific budgets, underspending, under collection of revenue, but if the economy sometimes is not growing, that translates also into that. And the question is always, what other mechanisms do you have in place? Some municipalities, and I take submission yesterday in the cabinet, and I am concerned. There are some municipalities that are now facing what I call a fiscal risk, and we are worried about some of these particular municipalities, and we are now assisting that Malcolm maybe can maybe speak more authoritatively about what is the local government budget office doing in terms of ensuring and assisting municipalities to ensure financial sustainability.
Mitchell? Thank you, Chair. With regards to the smaller municipalities, in particular the rural municipalities, where there is no MECO member for finance, who do you deal with, or who goes through that workshop, for lack of a better word? And then, so, with regards to the local budget office. So in a municipality like Beaufort West, for argument's sake, who advises that council, with no disrespect to the staff or the council, but that we are now in the position that there won't be any funds coming in, we will now need to make a loan against a grant fund in order to pay a service provider, otherwise X and Y and Z will happen, but knowing that they won't get that stream, won't come in to pay that grant fund. So, I mean, I don't know if you get where I'm going with this, but because it's a real concern, in particular, I mean, the city of Cape Town, for example, with the bigger budget, is completely different to a Beaufort West or a Laingsburg or even Prince Albert for that matter.
Thank you. Did you think, Chair, ask between Harry and Albert maybe just answer some of those things? I mean, there's there are processes that we run within the background which I can elaborate on in terms of our intake process and our advice that we normally give when municipalities want to buy power and so on. So I think let me answer those questions. Just want to come back to some of the earlier comments. Chair, just to go back to page 94, and I mean, this, in terms of the Audit Committee's notes, specific to this, MTS issues, I mean, we do not have assets that will be required to be componentized, and we do not have inventory holding department. So, from as far as that is concerned, I mean, we should be okay. Then, Chair, from a provincial perspective, I mean, this relates to the comment that was raised earlier, in addition to that matter, is, you know, what happens with circulars that are issued to the province, etc. I mean, we've got a process in place where we engage with National Treasury. I mean, if it's something that they only issue for consultation with us, for input, etc., I mean, we go through the process of canvassing inputs within the departmental structures to get input. So we try and manage the risk in that way. Chair, then, I'm going to pass in the hand over to Harry and Malcolm to deal with the first part of the comments that are made now. And then I'm going to ask Isaac to deal with the issue around the health need desk on the council platform.
Yeah, thanks. Just on the matter of borrowing, I mean, borrowing is fundamentally part of a municipality's budget, and particularly on the capital side. So normally when a municipality tables their budget, in fact, even before that, when they go out to the public participation process with their budget, they would indicate as part of the budget proposals how they're going to finance their budget. So it's part of the financing instruments. Obviously the work that we do as a Treasury, once we get the budgets, normally end of March, then we actually take that budget through a full budgetary assessment process. And I think Dr. Meyer explained it very nicely. We look at both revenue and we look at expenditure. We cover the areas of sustainability, the credibility of the budget, and we effectively indicate from our side whether we have the view that that budget is actually funded, because that's actually the big test. So is the municipality able to finance its service delivery obligations? So the revenue assumptions, is it correct? Is it credible? The expenditure assumptions, is it correct? Is it credible? We've got various tools that we use internally in the Treasury to test that. And then we also test the responsiveness of these various budgets. So to what extent is the budget responsive to the community needs and does it respond to the IDP document? And again, as I indicated earlier today, that process we normally do with our partners. So we don't do it alone. We do it with Environmental Affairs, the Department of Local Government, and ourselves as a Treasury. And you know, we're applicable. We also pull in National Treasury into the process, particularly for the City of Cape Town and also the George municipality. In relation to the borrowing stuff, once it's in the budget and it's approved by council, by the time that they want to take up the borrowing, there is a formal process that's set out in the MFMA. And then they get a second round of inputs from the community, and they also ask our final view. And then we again assess the budget, and then we use the media monitoring system to see whether, firstly,
it's affordable, and secondly, whether the municipality has actually got the ability to repay the loan over the expected lifetime of the loan. And as I indicated earlier, you can only borrow for capital infrastructure. So we do all those tests, and then that letter is normally sent off, and we also send a letter to council, and the councillors or the mayor is obliged to table those letters as part of the property process in council when they consider the borrowing proposal. So that's more or less the outline how a typical borrowing proposal works. And there are municipalities where we say it's affordable. We can't tell them to take it up or not. I mean, it's really a council decision. And there were municipalities in the past where we recommended that they do not take up the borrowing, then they say no, that's fine, we don't recommend, we take it up. And then some of those municipalities have actually, you know, gone down in terms of the, let's call it the general financial kind of outcome. So we provide comment, and that's only the process here that we go about to do this.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think Gary has already covered a lot in terms of what was supposed to cover. But just to add that in terms of Section 18 of the NFMA, a municipal bus must be funded. So the one test that we do from a credibility perspective is to see whether the revenue and expenditure matches. But municipalities are allowed to table a deficit budget. But obviously we advocate that the budget must be balanced. So the one thing that we do during the assessment process is to then test whether the budget is indeed funded. So what we find at when we do the assessment around the tabling of the budget is that there may be municipalities' budgets that are not fully funded, so we make recommendations to them where they need to cut expenditure or whether they have to raise their revenue or even when their revenue assumptions are not realistic. So then we do a second test when they then adopt their budget, and then at that time we can then test whether the budgets or the budgets are indeed funded.
You have a question on that?
Again, I want to get practical with both you, Mr. Malina and Malcolm. I know you just said now that the municipality can budget for a deficit. What happens in the case of there's already a budget that shows a deficit, then a huge factory that employs hundreds of people in that municipal area closes down. Automatically, those projections that you saw when you approved that budget is not going to work. Give you two examples, very relevant to where I work. That bridge in Ashton, which offered so many people work from Basil Reed, and that canning factory also in Ashton that has now closed down, and most of those people come from the Lumberburg, Montague, Swellendam area. So automatically that big gap, those people can't pay for services anymore, half of them don't get grants. How do you cover that gap in the, or when do you start picking up that the municipality cannot deliver the services that it should based on the budget that it presented to you? Because these are realities.
No, I fully agree, and again, as Malcolm have indicated, what we normally do every year, we normally table the PERO and MERO documentation. That's normally this time of the year. That provides the economic information it also looks forward. But then what we also do is we also provide each municipality with a CPLG, which stands for Socio-Economic Profile of Local Government. So that document would then provide you with the socioeconomic profile of your particular area. And then the municipality needs to use that information to actually put their budget documentation and stuff together. What the MFMA regulations ask for, what we look at the assumptions that's been put into the budget and whether those assumptions are reasonable and whether the assumptions hold. If things happen during the year, like in the case of Ashton, I mean, we're acutely aware of it, we will then look at the in-year monitoring reports, because through in-year monitoring reports you then test whether the projections and the actuals, whether there are major differences between them. And particularly if we found that there are major differences on we would engage the municipality, because we receive the India monitoring reports on a monthly basis, and we table it to Parliament on a quarterly basis, particularly in relation to the monthly shortfalls. Because then the municipality have got two ways to finance it. They can either finance it from their reserves, or they need to cut back on committed expenditure. And if there's a reason or need to cut back, then we would also send in our teams to actually assist them to almost recraft their budget based on new assumptions. And that's normally the process, Chair, that we would go about. Obviously, if something like that happens, it's very, very difficult to adjust the budget in year, but the municipality will typically revise the budget internally and only go to council during the January-February process with certain adjustments. But if, as soon as we become aware of a municipality, we put them on our own, we've got our own list, we call it the municipalities that we deem to be vulnerable for various reasons, and we then on a monthly basis internally have a special focus on those municipalities. So whether it's on the revenue expenditure or even infrastructure side, and sometimes we even go out, I mean, like we've done over the last month, to four or five municipalities as an executive team to talk about particular things. And if there's also reason to inform the Minister of Finance and also the Minister of Local Government in terms of their own responsibilities, and they need to speak to the council, if there's a need to speak to the council, we inform them administratively and they have acted accordingly. So that's normally the process
Chair, in addition to that, what I also do, those processes that Harry now has explained, he, from that processes, for example, came to me at the time and said, listen, your minister, that municipality has cash flow only for the next 6 months. That's a major risk. So what I do in those incidences, I engage with the speaker of that municipality, because it's no use to talk now to the mayor. They're going to run out of money. So what we then do, call the speaker and ask for a council meeting. And then we table our report in the council. I've done it numerous times. And then I ask the council, in fact, I said to the council, I'm not here for you to note my report. I'm now here for you to instruct you to adopt this report, because there's no money to bail you out. And there are severe financial management issues. And sometimes some of these matters are not brought under the attention by the officials, under the attention of the mayors. That's just a reality. So what I do, I request that we put it on the agenda of the council meeting, and then we engage and ask them to adopt such decisions. One of the municipalities that had a severe problem is also now one of the vulnerable municipalities that Harry has indicated, but the mayor rented a car for 60,000 rent a month. So I didn't go there and ask him about it. I went there to tell him, this is going to stop. And we stopped it. So in some cases, because it's a separate sphere of government, we respect the separation of levels or spheres of government, but there are times that we have to be much more decisive. What we are now doing is we're withholding money from some of these municipalities that simply just carry on, no regard for proper financial management, and we are not going to transfer, and we have done it already, implemented it in that particular case. So I know where Honourable Member Beerle will come from, and Honourable Member Dalen Mitchell come from, in terms of some of these municipalities that simply do not adhere to some of these things. One municipality has made applied for a loan of 20 million rand. Part of that process is to get our input and the input from the National Treasury. Through the credibility and testing of the budget, we saw clearly they cannot pay this money back. So we wrote back to them and said, these are our comments, but we cannot, as Harry said, tell them not to apply for a loan. That's the independent decision, but we give professional advice. And based on our advice, it was clear that this municipality will run into financial problems. This municipality has now experienced this particular problem, because our report also needs, as you put it, has to be tabled into the council. And then the councillors, the officials, must now assess. Because if you're in a council and you say, yes, the official wants you to make a loan, here's a clear indication of technical analysis,
going to run into financial problems. Then it's up to the council to decide. And many of them, sorry to say, have no clue. They just simply approve without knowing what they are approving. And as Harry said, you can only apply for loans for capital expenditure. But these are the matters that we will now take forward, part of the training for the main commitment of finance in November, and we will engage with these municipalities about it, so that they also read the report of the national treasury and the provincial treasury before they approve loans.
Outstanding questions?
Can I please ask a question? If it's through your chair, you just said now municipality can only make a loan for capital expenditure. What if they can't pay the staff and whoever else needs to be paid? Where do they get that money from? Do you lend it to them?
Remember, in terms of the legislation, you can borrow for, but you can only borrow to cover your normal kind of operating expenditure, but then you must repay it by the end of the financial year. So you can have it's like an overdraft that you need to cover. But the pure borrowing is only for infrastructure. So it should be of a temporary measure. I mean, if you go into overdraft.
Thank you. Any other concerning questions again?
But when we are open, I mean, honestly, I mean, if a municipality has not the ability to repay, they shouldn't take up the loan. I mean, full stop. It's as simple as that.
I just want to answer Member Stan's question relating to the accounting framework. As you're fully aware, part of our responsibility is to support municipalities to adhere to the accounting reporting framework, which is CAP, and also when the new standards or exposure drafts during the course of the year, and part of the responsibilities is to ensure that municipalities understand and are trained on it. So we've developed the PDRP test, where the municipality can actually any issues that they would like to be trained on, or any questions they want to ask, and then we respond to it. What has been found is that the process that we're currently undergoing, that we don't have fully compliant standing operating procedures for that, and that was identified as a risk, not only as far as the backup and knowledge is concerned, but also in terms of new staff that enter our component. And we're currently busy improving on the PDRP standing operating procedures. Also, apart from just the standing operating procedures, we're also busy to develop standing operating procedures also for training our staff. So that is one of the areas within the local government accounting unit that's been identified as lacking, and as we've indicated, that by the end of this financial year, we would probably have all the standing operating procedures in place. As far as the MCS is concerned, that's on the departmental side. We've got a similar process where we need to assist the departments and also to ensure that they comply with the modified test standards. Similarly, we also have got the outlets in place. And when there's any new developments or issues on the modified test standard, part of our responsibilities is to ensure that the departments know about it. And as a result of that, we will have workshops with all the departments on any new developments on the modified test standard.
In terms of the Western Cape supplier database, we will be continuing to use that. We have got an arrangement with the National Treasury. They have asked for the CSD, which is the Central Supplier Database, to be used as the master data. However, the challenges with the CSD, as was indicated in the previous session, was its credibility of some of the information, also the fact that it doesn't have an evidence-based support to some of the profiles that are on the CSD, that we need to keep our governance requirements stable and consistent for the audit process. So we will be supporting, we've accepted that the CSD will be the primary data source. However, we need to augment that in terms of sustaining our governance requirements. So the Western Cape supply database will still be used as the supplier evidence bank to support the CSD.
Any other questions on governance? Can we move on to the financials?
Okay.
Okay, let's move on to the announcements. Partly. So we do the entire announcements. We ask specific questions and we do the. So I'm not doing face to face. We're doing the entire announcements. Member Ace first. Do you have a question on governance? No, Member Ace was first and then you. Okay, Member Ace.
Three questions, Chair. Thank you. Page 161, Chairperson. I think we must just get an update in terms of underspending and some of the issues was raised was vacant posts, late procurement of research and advisory services. So if we can get that, if we refer to the Auditor General's report, there's also reference to some of the vacancies that's there. And just get a clear understanding when the vacancies will be filled and whether that would be soon. That's the first one. Then on page 179, Chairperson, I would just like to understand the increase in spending on communication and the decrease in training and development. And earlier on it was mentioned that all training all money for training was not utilized, and if you can just understand why it was not utilized, or was everybody just too busy to pay attention to the training itself. And then on page 192, Chairperson, a question there is in terms of irregular expenditure, you will find it there at the bottom, that block there, and if you can just enlighten us and explain the irregular expenditure as stated on page 192 in regard to the 79,000 and also the 37,000 and the 42. Thank you.
Thank you, Member Weber.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm on page 159. I'd like to know which of those columns show me the adjustments that were made at the adjustment budget and the adjustments that were made after the adjustment budget. In which program that happened and why. Then consultants on the next page, 150, are together with page 136. I'm assuming that the total I see there is all of those consultants that's listed on page 150 under goods and services. You have your consultant figure. You actually spent, you underspent on the consultants anyway. My question about the consultants, did you go out to tender for all of them? And if you went out to tender, who are they doing the work for? Are they doing it for the department? Are they just doing it? And if you didn't go out to tender, who are they doing the work for? Because you've got it under goods and services. Then on page 181, I think it is, just a general commentary. Treasury obviously is not a service delivery angle, and I'm saying this lightly now. When I said that there's not a service delivery department, they do deliver services, but not like other departments or communities, they're more internal. And you can see that on every vote, on the vote in every program's cost of employees, and the little bit that's left for goods and service if you look at every program. So that just proves that there's more employees and it's more internally focused. Page 181, Chairperson. It's a note to the annual financial statement. Recent cost, who was that and why? Why do you have to pay for, and I'm on page 180, 4.2 computer services, why do you have to pay for service providers that have to be registered on the Ariba database? Do they not pay to register themselves on the database?
Can I just get on 184, the tracking machine, was that for the department or for use between other departments as well?
Okay.
It's a standard price these days for a tracking machine.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to give Nigel the opportunity to answer those questions and we'll come back for another round.
Chair, I'm going to ask the finance team to assist me with quite a question for detail that's complicated with most of the answers to them. Chair, just to make it start off, I mean, the understanding and I mean the late procurement and the member asked, you know, what is the status on the filling of costs? I mean, we have got a detail list, so we have to submit a full report in terms of where all the posts are in the treasury that have been funded. And we're in one stage of recruitment there. Otherwise, I mean, we can give a list to the committee. If that's a lot of detail. And then our chair, I'm going to ask the team to then just handle the rest of the questions here.
Is it still
Sir
for
the 80 was, if a contract is expired, how do you pay someone if a contract is expired? I think you might just go in detail there. I don't know, they just want to ask on certain things that you asked now. Member Mitchell, and then new question. Member Bimbo?
Yeah, just the resettlement cost. I asked who it was for. I know why you do it. I asked who it was for and from where or to where.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I don't have the list of the names here, but I will be, we can provide the list of the names of the people that
okay, so also maybe but we can ask that in the other question about the expired contract.
Was the payment that was done, and not did we receive the invoices and the payments were done just without checking that the contract was still valid, or was it what was the refund?
It was the matter was reported to me, and then it was an oversight within the department. I mean, I've addressed it with the CFO, and we closed up.
These were changes that happened
during this that part of the financial year. And we also keep a register where we note all the movements between our programs, so that we can actually, we want to, we actually want to, when we report to you, that is why we are showing those, even though we knew there would be understanding under the certain items. Yeah, so for, let's say, data reporting, yeah, that is why we did those adjustments to show the members and the public that our funds are used.
Don't take the accolade for yourself. It's because of me pressing you guys for telling us. When do you move after the adjustment budget? Now I'm going to ask you for even better reporting. Can you in future just give us a note, a little asterisk to say, the adjustment that happened after the adjustment budget is in this column of environment and this and this and this is the reason. Because if I just look at that without having asked this question, I would not have known why you went to environment after the adjustment budget. Thank you.
Okay. Can, is that questions answered? Is there further follow-up questions? Is there any other questions? Member
Bishop,
and then Member, yeah, you Bishop, and then Member Bishop, and then Member McKenzie.
Thank you, Chairperson. On page 195, two questions. Provincial Treasury, you might use of the government motor vehicle management by government motor transport based on tariffs approved. Are you the department then actually approving the tariffs of that department, as you stated here, and just to explain what process do you follow in approving tariffs like that? And then I see there's Provincial Treasury receives security advisory services and security operations from the Department of Community Safety. What services do you receive and do you pay for that services? Then Chairperson, on page 196, just to understand that 9 laptops were stolen, what happened after that, and was there any action taken? Was any of it returned? So if you can just can explain what is the issue around that. And then 198, we see the assets that were disposed on the sold for cash, but it was not removed from the asset register. Is that normal practice, or why did you not remove it from the asset register? That's one feature.
Member Mitchell?
I just wanted to firstly welcome the fact that the bursary allocation has been spent. But I don't always do. And you don't have to provide it now, but perhaps as a recommendation that just how the not the names of the bursary or the beneficiaries, but how the categories, how it's been awarded. Because I think it's very good that it's actually been spent. And then just also just a comment. I'm glad to see that the entertainment budget is decreasing, so it's a good thing. I'm glad that they're not their time to eat.
Thank you, Member McKenzie.
Thank you, Chair. Just for on the 9 laptops that were stolen, I mean, one particular note at the bottom that says included in the basket of removal the assets were machinery and equipment, and below that says 9 laptops stolen. And then, but on the notes on page 185, the laptop stolen debt is 29,000 rand. These very old laptops, and the debt that are 29,000 divided by 9 is 2,200 or something. And then, lastly, on the Franklin machine, so that I need to ask again, why are you emailing me?
schools.
Ask already.
Oh, ask already.
Ask already. Yeah, finish ask. Remember, remember?
You asked that to page 8. Now we go back to page 16.
No.
No, I'm going back to page 16. Yes. I'm going to go back there because I want to find my question, Ajay. Procurement efficiencies and prudent procurement spending will continue to be supported by strategic sourcing methodologies and procurement planning processes to leverage efficiency gains and economies of scale. Latched onto the question of Member McKenzie. Now, coming back to what is on my desk at this very moment. Chair, how does Treasury, through you to Treasury, how do you monitor spending on paper? This used to have copious amounts of copies of dumped in front of us on a regular basis at every committee meeting that we attend. We get a copy on the computer, we get a copy here, we get another copy there. Hundreds and thousands of rand is spent on paper. That's part of your, what's this word that you use to spend and utilize your funds better? Shouldn't you start there and do things electronically? That's the same thing Member McKenzie is asking. And you say in your book that's what you want to do. So
thank you. Thank you. Actually, Member
McKenzie? The annual report of the department is in color, but the department of education is in black and white. So the stories we managed to start here.
Actually, you can now respond. Chair, I'd like Nadia to maybe just spend 2 minutes on the policy strategy that we've applied in terms of, in fact, the very question that the members asked around the driving efficiencies. I mean, obviously what we've done in that approach, I mean, we started with big items. I can't tell you whether it is a big item or that, but I mean, Nadia will know better. Chair, I mean, maybe something for the committee to consider. I mean, if you don't like paper copies, then I would say we'll provide you with electronic copies, not in terms of published documents that require to do, but I mean, for presentations and so on. I mean, it's obviously then implied that we'll be most of your laptops and so on. But I mean, it is something that we can definitely take into consideration for if it's that. I mean, the question that the Treasury approving of the tariffs, I mean, that is a function of the fiscal policy unit. I mean, the tariff approval is a function that affects within the Treasury. And then, Chair, if I can then ask Seth just to pick up some of the other questions, and then there is a set that reminded me that, you know, the franking machine is still a requirement. There's lots of documents that we need to dispense with. So unfortunately, it is something that we still have to use.
To answer the question on 195 with regards to the advisory services of the Department of Community Safety, as indicated, that 25 has related party transaction, so it's free of charge and we don't pay for that, and that is mostly to give us advice on security issues within the department. And then on page 198, the removal of the assets, from the assets as registered, the supposed to have. That is not supposed to be the practice. We need to remove the assets.
are saying that if for those employees that have lost the laptops, the disciplinary plus they have to pay back. If they found negligence to that effect. So what constitutes negligence?
Negligence is obviously there are we've got financial instructions that indicate how do you need to treat your laptop, what do you need to do with your laptop while it's in the office, and like certain specific procedures that you have to do. And so if we found that you have not followed the financial instructions and the procedures, then you will come with you. But then just leaving my laptop in your car, everybody can see it, and so now it's a car, then I would think it's more efficient.
Thank you very much, Steve. Is that all the questions answered? Ariba?
Okay, the one would be Mr. Ariba. I think the it doesn't refer to database registration, it's for the entire e-procurement system, part of which the not on Ariba one, which is for registration of supplier. It's not for registration per se, it's for the e-procurement system, which is part of maintaining the West UK supply database, and one of the functions is registration of supplier as well. Okay, on the strategic sourcing question, I think from a strategic sourcing perspective, when you're looking at efficiencies, we look at strategic commodities for the products. And that has been the focus. However, since this year, we have raised this second time in the year on paper efficiencies, I think it's one of the things that I, as a, my transversal functions, will look at the oversight of as well in terms of how they look at efficiencies for those products.
Thank you. Is that all asked?
Can I just make a comment on the issue of paper? I think it's important. I mean, it's not here that it came up. It also came up at some of our internal engagement. And I mean, I'll actually like maybe scope it to consider making a recommendation to all the standing committees. You know, so that we don't come to some standing committees because if you come here and you don't have paper, I mean, all the beautiful, all I'll let loose. So I think the scope can actually make a recommendation that Parliament accepts it, that when people come present here, that we actually do it electronically. Because my understanding is that all members have got laptops, and that's normally the new, obviously when they get into the system, you know, new term, and they actually receive new laptops. So from our side, we would definitely welcome that recommendation.
Members, are there any other questions? Member Ace?
Just throw those recommendations over. Nobody will accept that in any way. Chairperson, just on one double line, I see there's reference to minor capital assets on the investigation. If you can just explain that, especially in the library groups, we have our own library and it looks like it just disappeared. 93,000. We also see these minor assets to a value of half a million. That was not removed from the asset register, so it seems like that's a trend. Maybe we can get a firm commitment today. When will that happen, that you will clean up your asset registers and get that sorted out? Then, Chairperson, I think we just need to pause for a moment on 204 and 205 as well. And just ask the officials just to rectify the table, especially on 204 at the bottom there, for the purpose of scope of taking that forward. And then I would like to ask one or two questions coming from that on 204 in terms of the two grants that's been reflected there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just
asking that.
On the library groups, yes, we have our own library. We have decided to close down the library because it was not utilized efficiently, effectively, and we have took out the books from the library. We did a reconfiguration, and obviously there were some books that couldn't
surveillance, and that is one of the functions that Harvard will be responsible for, and the aim of the finance will get to be able to have an accurate asset register.
Okay, is that the question?
If it's 93 or 90,000 grand, that's just gone. It must be a very big library that you have. What are you going to do with the books that's available now? Are you going to take it to the library there? Because you must have really specialized, technical specialized books that's available.
Yeah, what we did is we looked at the books, and some of the books we issued to the technical books were issued to the different units to be used, and also the other books we are negotiating with the Department of DCAD to tackle the needs for the library.
Thank you. Is that the end of the questions?
Yeah, Chair, on 204 we will correct it. As we agreed to the standard. That's what I'm referring to 204. We will rectify the table at the bottom. We'll provide scope with the new table.
Thank you. Any other questions? Is that it? Minister, you can do concluding remarks, and then I will ask Member McKenzie to do the thank yous. Thank you.
Thank you to the Standing Committee of Public Accounts, as usual. At the end of this period, I normally look at the SCOPA resolutions, and we make sure that we implement all the SCOPA resolutions. As you've seen, the SCOPA resolutions that you have adopted in the previous financial year, we are monitoring it, and we make sure that this body's recommendations are fully implemented as documented in our annual report. As you have seen, we have again received a clean order, and we are particularly happy for the combined assurance model. We want to express our deep thanks and appreciation to all the accounting officers, all the program managers, all our internal control, as well as the external audit committee, as well as the Department of the Premier and the Auditor General for the good cooperation, because to get a clean audit and to table an annual report of this magnitude and scale requires the work of all of us, including the Standing Committee, the Budget Office, as well as this particular Standing Committee of Public Accounts, and it was a great pleasure to report back on some of the questions that was asked in terms of the reports that we must come back to the committee. We will also follow these matters up. I want to express my thanks for the opportunity to present our annual report to SCOPA this afternoon.
Member McKenzie.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's nice being back on SCOPA again. Even if it's a temporary alternative, all my other colleagues are not here. Yeah, and I mean, thank you for the department for another clean audit. And I think governance is very important from every clerk, deputy director, assistant director, level 7, 5, 10 director, chief director. Because without treasury, as we've seen in recent times, without proper good governance in place, including your audit, which is including the AG and internal controls, things go bust, literally, a bank goes bust in our roads. Because these internal controls and good governance measures are not in place, or they are completely ignored. So your job is far more important than you think. Without qualified, honest, reliable, competent, good officials that take their job seriously, threat is going to fall into bust. I mean, we've seen recently now retired minister stood up against whatever you may call it, God's authoritarianism, by declining to sign a deal that will bank us 2 or 3 generations. So whenever somebody asks you to do something, stand up for your principles. And when you're a treasury official that can stand up for your principles, nothing can collapse governments. So thank you very much for the work that you do. It's not only about clean audit, it's about standing up for what is right. And Minister Nene and many other officials in all other departments across the country, and in other provinces as well, mind you, that have stood up for what is right, and just do their job according to the law. Nothing can defeat that principle. You know you've got the best sleep at night, that listen, you didn't steal a cent or 2 cents. The only thing I criticize is if the second machine starts sending him.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. It's very important. The other part that you have to do, I think, is more. We'll take a 5 minute break and then we'll commence. Thank you very much.